Okay, we have a class on Jerusalem, 1967, Yom Yerushalayim. How many of you guys said Hallel on Yom Atzma'ut? We did that here, right? Good. We said it without a blessing, with different opinions. But, you got me on, yeah, they're on there?
They're not on here, but
whoever
comes on.
Okay, yeah. Fine, thank you.
I sent it.
We do actually say Hallel with a blessing for Yom Yerushalayim. So according to some, Yom Yerushalayim takes on greater religious significance than Yom Atzma'ut. Why is that? What do you think? It's not on the page.
Because it's more of like a religious significance.
Why does it take on more? Why?
Except for the Beit HaMikdash one.
The temple was in Jerusalem, good.
Well, we also pray in the Amidah for Hashem to return to Jerusalem.
Good. Okay, so we're going to get into that soon. Also, some like to say that the miracle which took place at the Six-Day War was even more overtly miraculous than what happened in 1948. So I'm going to go over with you a little. To understand the nature of the miracle, you have to first understand the backdrop. What happened from the 19 years since the establishment of the State of Israel in 1948 until 67? What was going on in Israel during those 19 years? Easy, medium, difficult, hard?
Hard.
Very, very difficult. Anybody know what year the Palestinian Liberation Organization was created? The PLO, which is today Fatah, or the Palestinian Authority. Everybody thinks it was created in 67. As a result of Israel taking over these lands. Everyone here should know that the PLO was created in 1963, 4 years before the Six-Day War. And what was the PLO devoted to doing? In the beginning, was not devoted to making a peace treaty with Israel, but basically carrying out terrorist attacks. And by 64, the PLO splintered off into a whole bunch of other smaller groups, all hostile to Israel. Most of the attacks came from Jordan, from the Gaza Strip, from Lebanon. Who was giving all the logistical support to these attacks? All from Egypt and Syria. Now, who was the most belligerent anti-Semitic Arab leader at the time, the most powerful Arab country?
Nasser.
Abdul Nasser.
Egypt.
He was the president of Egypt. And his main objective was basically to harass the Israelis. Syria also became much more hostile. They had the strategic high ground of the Golan, 3,000 feet above the Galilee. And they were basically shelling Israeli farms and kibbutzes that were in the Galilee. This is what was going on between 48 and 67. What was your question?
So Egypt and Syria were like for, I think, 3 or 5 years or something, they were one country, the United Arab Republic.
No, they're separate countries, but they had an alliance when it came to attacking Israel, basically. The attacks grew more and more frequent. There were children living in the kibbutzes, in the Chula Valley, forced to sleep in bomb shelters. My friend who lives on the in Ashkelon, which is very close to the Gaza border, sent me a picture of him and his wife. My friend Ari Salomon, who's from Lowell, Massachusetts, who lives there now, sent me a picture of him and his wife eating in their bombshell, in their bomb shelter. I'd love to believe that so much has changed since then, but unfortunately a lot hasn't. Israel repeatedly protested to the United Nations whenever these attacks would take place, and the United Nations would repeatedly do nothing. And meanwhile, whenever Israel retaliated, the United Nations would condemn their retaliation. Does that sound familiar? Okay. Nasser increased his belligerent remarks, declaring Israel's aim to destroy the Jewish state. Syria's attacks from the Golan Heights finally provoked Israel to retaliate on April 7th, 1967. It's just good to know some of these facts. And during the attack, Israeli planes downed six Syrian MiGs. Who gave the MiGs to Syria? The Russians. Soviets told the Syrians that Israel was amassing a military buildup in preparation for an attack. Of course, that wasn't true. And Israel denied it, but Syria decided to invoke its defense treaty with Egypt. and asked Nasser to come to its aid. I'm not sure its aid for what. And then all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, but what's developed is this massive, massive buildup along Israel's borders. These are real numbers, 465,000 troops, 2,800 tanks. I have some other numbers in my notes here. 800 aircraft encircled Israel. Israel's 19 years old. Now, Israel's on high alert. You can't stay on high alert indefinitely. The whole country is basically paralyzed and just waiting either to be attacked or to do something. The United States made it very, very clear to Israel that if she shot the first bullet, America could not stand behind Israel or give her arms. Who was supplying Israel with arms until this point? It was the French. America was not. Israel hoped that America would, but Israel then was forced to choose between giving up the elements of surprise and preemptively attacking and losing American support, potential American support, or just getting the element of, you know, we're just waiting to be attacked.
I thought the French were anti-Semitic, but I guess, no. Okay. That was during World War II, where they were, in the beginning.
The French were terribly anti-Semitic. It depends, you know, the French allowed themselves not much of a choice to be taken over by the Germans and the Vichy government that they created in France. And a lot of French Jews were killed as a result. There were very few countries that stood up to Hitler, though, and didn't hand over their Jews. So they weren't great, but they weren't, you know. They didn't participate in killing Jews like the Ukrainians and Poles did. You talk to Holocaust survivors, they were more afraid of some of the Ukrainian guards in the camps than they were the Nazis. So you didn't have French doing that.
But it's the alliance from the beginning that's why it was.
Yeah, the alliance, exactly. But France was a supporter of Israel. They weren't doing it for altruistic reasons. They were trying to contain Soviet aggression, which is how America eventually got in. All countries act in their own national, their best interests of their own national security. So it's not like anyone's doing this because we have shared democratic values. That's what they say at all the AIPAC conferences. And I'm not saying it isn't true, but it's not the main reason. Okay, anyway. So, anybody, what did Israel do?
One.
What's that?
67.
What did they do? They had this...
Preemptive.
They preemptively struck. Anybody know how it started? 7:14 in the morning. What day? By the way, just to give you a thing, 7:14, the entire Israeli army, June 5th, 1967, the entire Israeli Air Force, with the exception of 12 fighters assigned to defend Israeli airspace, took off, and within less than 2 hours, destroyed 300 Egyptian aircraft on the ground. Anybody know how they got through the radar?
They
flew incredibly low, but there was a little miracles going on there also because they scrambled the frequency. But in order to get into the frequency to scramble, you have to have a certain level of intelligence, which the Egyptians kept changing every few hours. But they got some bad, they were told by the Jordanians one thing or the Syrians. I don't know, you got to read about this. There's a lot of well-documented. I read like 3 books on the Six-Day War. There's like a million books written about this war. Just the fact that Israel got in there undetected, destroyed the Egyptian Air Force on the ground. They then went into Syrian Air Forces and a Jordanian Air Force, and as well as an airfield in Iraq. And within the first day, they already had air superiority, which was an unbelievable thing, which they needed. And you'll see why in a minute. The battle moved to the ground, and some of history's greatest tank battles were fought between Israeli armor tanks in the south against the Egyptians. And while most of the IDF were fighting the Egyptians and the Jordanians, there was a small group of soldiers left to defend Israel against the Syrians that had the strategic... Has anyone been to the Golan Heights?
Yeah.
So you've seen it? We go there now.
Yeah,
but you look down. What's that? Right, on the heritage. So you look down, you see, I was right. So it was an unbelievable thing. And how did the old city come into the picture now?
It was Jordanian controlled, and the Israeli army took it over from the Jordanian.
Right, so during this whole time, Golda Meir was shuttling back and forth, talking to King Hussein, trying to keep Jordan out of the war. It was bad enough that Israel had to fight a war on two fronts. I don't know how many countries have done this, to fight a war on three fronts. And when you're completely outnumbered and outgunned, but Jordan joined the pact, and once we're fighting with Jordan, they were the ones who were controlling East Jerusalem, where the Kotel is. And until that point, you know, my dad always told me about his trip to Israel that he went in 1960. All right, so you can go to Jerusalem, but you can like see, couldn't even see the Western Wall. You could not. You were on the west part of, you know, it was like no man's land, and no man's land was like Jordanian snipers. It was very dangerous to go to. And you could see today, when you go to Yerushalayim, you'll be there, you'll see like, you know, bullet holes where the Jordanian snipers used to shoot. Nobody went into this territory. And this is what was going on for 19 years. And the order was given to recapture the old city, which was a very bold move. Is anybody who's... What's that?
Who gave the order?
Oh. So this is very interesting. There was a big fight in the Knesset, can you imagine? Levi Eshkol was Israel's prime minister. He sent a message to Hussein that Israel would not attack Jordan unless they initiated hostilities. The Egyptians convinced Hussein that Israel was going to attack them anyway, so Jordan joined. And Israel, it took only 3 days, basically, for Israeli forces to defeat the very well-reputed Jordanian legionnaires. You can go to Givat HaTachmoshet Ammunition Hill and actually see the trenches where Jews were fighting against the Jordanians. There were many Jews killed there. But we were successful in the end. And June 7th, the order was given to recapture the old city, which until that time was under Jordanian rule. The Tzanchanim, Israeli paratroopers, arrived, secured it before the defense minister, Moshe Dayan. You heard of Moshe Dayan, the guy with the patch, defense minister of Israel. And anybody know who's the chief of staff at the time? Yitzhak Rabin. These all famous Israeli leaders. And the chief rabbi of the Israeli army, Rabbi Gorin, showed up with a shofar and a Sefer Torah, the famous pictures of him blowing the shofar. Unbelievable thing. And on June 10th, Israel accepted a ceasefire. By the way, this is important for everyone to know. By June 10th, Israel was in a position to march on Cairo, Egypt, Damascus, Syria, and Amman, Jordan. Did they?
No.
Why? Because we're not interested in taking over other people's capitals or countries. And that's the next time you get into a conversation with your colleagues who accuse Israel of just, you know, being colonialists and imperializing this, just taking over, tell them, and in the Six-Day War, after we were about to be attacked, we struck preemptively, and we were so successful that we could have actually taken over Egypt, Jordan, and Syria. We were in such a position. Their capitals were vulnerable. We didn't do it for one reason, because we don't want to be an occupying power. We're not interested in that. But we were an occupying, and we still are, and we discussed this, on the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, for purely military and defense reasons. Now, there are some ideologues amongst us that wanted Yehuda v'Shomron, Judea and Samaria, and the East Bank, and the east part of Jerusalem, because they have a lot of historical religious significance. But they were essentially taken by the IDF as buffers, because Israel's 9 miles wide. Somebody said if Ukraine was 9 miles wide and Russia attacked, the war would have been over within a week. 9 miles wide. Everyone here in this room is capable of running for 9 miles, or walking at least. It's nothing. Israel took it as a buffer, gave back. Right, and Israel tripled its size in the Six-Day War. The Golan Heights we didn't have before, the Sinai Peninsula, the Gaza Strip, what we call West Bank and the West Bank and Yerushalayim. Israel faced 5 countries with a combined military might of twice the number of soldiers, 3 times the amount of tanks, 4 times as much aircraft. It was a miracle. And hopefully you'll get to hear from David Sprung, who spoke at the tail end of our last year trip while we were trying to get our meat from the restaurant.
Oh,
remember that?
So
it was terrible. It was crazy. We're not, if we have him speak, we're not going to have him speak in a restaurant. Again, I felt bad for him.
He was really good.
He was unbelievable, and he's a hero. And he said, you know, he was like, he was there when he was